to ride my bicycle. I want to ride my bike. I want to ride my bicycle. I want to ride it where I like.
The views expressed in this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores. I am Peddlin' Ron, and you are listening to Bicycle Talk, episode 423, to be broadcast Wednesday, December 11th, 2024, on WHUS 91.7 FM and WHUS.org. Welcome to Bicycle Talk. Without my friendly co-host, lovely Dr. Fran Storch, I am broadcasting on a Tuesday for a change. I'll explain that in a minute. Bicycle Talk is a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you have a comment or would like to contribute information to the show, you can just contact me here on Facebook Live if you're watching it right here, or you can also reach me by email at bicycletalk, the numeral one, at gmail.com. You can listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on WHUS.org, iTunes, Spotify, and now on my Bicycle Talk YouTube channel, Ron's Rant of the Week. Where the heck was Peddlin' Ron? Yeah, that's me, Peddlin' Ron. Yeah, where was I last week? Well, you know, life got complicated. Too many things were going on. I'm subbing classes for a friend of mine who's out sick at the community center. I ran out of time. That's all. That's all it was. So fortunately, the folks at WHUS, I do believe, played a past episode of Bicycle Talk for your entertainment. Even though I know it's not very timely, it was there. And so that's what's going on with, where Peddlin' Ron was. In addition to my rant of the week, I have here some facts to ponder. Okay. Pedestrians and cyclists hit by medium-height cars have a 60% chance of suffering moderate injuries. No surprise. But that figure rises to 83% when they're struck by a medium-height pickup truck at the same speed. Duh. All right. Well, there's my rant. We'll keep moving on. Why do I constantly talk about these darn cars and trucks? It's really the trucks that I don't like the most, but or the truck-like vehicles, which is what most of our cars have become. What's going on here? Why don't people just do something simple like ride a bicycle? It's Bicycle Talk. That's why we're talking about bicycles here. We'll talk more about bicycles today. We'll talk a little bit more about the positive side right now. The positive side is, get this, heard this one on NPR this morning. It's tough when you hear old news over and over and over and over and over again. You know, it's a little repetitious, but there's more evidence, get this, that exercise can have beneficial effects on cognitive performance. Huh? Okay. We'll talk a little bit more about this in the show. It's kind of a no-brainer for those of us who, you know, ride our bicycles, and especially those of us who recognize bicycle riders as employees and are very happy to take care of them when they ride their bicycles to work, because they're on top of things when they get to work because their brain's working better. Hello, this is not rocket science, although it is science. It is science. Let's get Bill Nye in on this one. Anyway, physical activity can boost memory, improve thinking, and even lower dementia risks. And it's not too late to start. Ever. Got it? Ever. I'll talk a little bit more about that in the show. I watched another World Cup cyclocross race last weekend. Not this past weekend, the weekend before. It was a World Cup in Dublin, Ireland. Again, it's on YouTube for free. If you want to watch real top-level cyclocross racing, all the World Cup races are on YouTube for free, for free. So you don't even have to have a subscription to it. Now, on the other hand, you do need a subscription to watch the Nationals coming up this weekend here in the U.S. It's another story, but you can get it through Flow Sports or Flow Bikes or Well, I think those are the only two places you can get it, actually. And they want, of course, for you to give them a lot of money to do that. But that's, you know, that's your decision. You don't have to do that. Or if you know somebody like your buddy Peddlin' Ron, who happens to be planning on watching it right here at Bassett's Bridge Road, right here, you could come on by. And all I require is, you know, a friendly personality, that's all. And we can watch some bike racing. So anyway, that's coming up this weekend, and I will have the broadcasts right here at our house. So if anybody wants to join me, you can join me. That'd be fun. Be a lot of fun. We get to critique and watch national level hardcore cyclocross racing, because it's nationals this weekend. Pretty cool. The Nationals this year are back in Louisville, and or Louisville, as they say down there. I believe that's how they say it down there. And anyway, it's a good thing. By the way, Project Mayhem Cyclocross, the big Connecticut series that was put together this year, big shouts out to all those involved, all the promoters, especially to my friend Jeremy Brazil, who came up with this idea. Jeremy was a former employee of mine back in the day, and it was really cool that he was able to put all this together. He's a marketing guy, so he's really good at this sort of thing. Anyway, the results are in, because the last race was last weekend, and that would have been the Orchard Scorcher, which was actually the weekend of December 1st, which would be, I guess that's about a week, a little over a week ago. Anyway, get this, the numbers are in too. So most of the races had over 200 riders, closer to 250 riders that were registered for the events. Our opener at Mansfield Hollow had 248. The Orchard Scorcher this last weekend, which was the final race, which tends to be the lightest of the races in the past when we put a series together, had 252 riders so registered. So that's really good. We're getting closer. I'm not up to the level that I'd like to see, like they get in the Massachusetts series. But you know what? We're climbing up a little bit closer. So great participation this year. Thank you all so much for, excuse me, that was not supposed to happen. Thank you all so much for everyone who tried to, who participated in the races and supported the races and, of course, promoted the races. So anyway, it was all a really good thing. So we're going to, we're going to big shout out to Project Mayhem Cyclocross. Okay, and maybe I'll have a little bit more in the show, but I think I pretty much covered all the numbers here. So, Mechanical Minute and Ron's tips for the week. How cold is too cold for cycling? Good question, right? There's no real definite answer to this, all right? It's only too cold when you're no longer comfortable riding. So, it's, you know, it's up to you. It's up to you. It can vary depending on your gear or your preferences, and, you know, you could stop road riding from 30 degrees Fahrenheit and below, or you could stop mountain biking from 15 degrees and below. It's really up to whatever your preferences are. Road biking for me, I've gotten old, I've gotten soft, and whereas I used to ride and train in really, really cold weather years ago because I was trying to get my miles in for bike racing, my limits have gone up, and 40 to 45 degrees is kind of as low as I'll go. That's Fahrenheit for those of you who are listening here on this side of the pond. This is I just can't day as warm as I used to be able to. And I have the equipment. I have the layers. I have everything I need to pull it off. But there's just something that I am mentally not prepared for to go out and deal with in the really, really cold weather. But as we say, there are those who will ride in all kinds of weather, and don't let the cold weather keep you off your bike. From clothes to safety to bike maintenance, there are some riding tips that will hopefully make your cycling a year-round event. I am not promoting, by the way, anything here other than general information as far as gear goes. Also, I am not promoting you to go out and ride in weather that is dangerous to be even driving a car in. I'm just, you got to use your head. You just got to use your head. That's all there is to it. It's not, once again, more not rocket science. And I don't know if it's science. Well, meteorology is science, so I guess it could be. So anyway, we're gonna take a look at this, and we are going to our friends over at the Pros Closet, and they have a little article within their website that says when is it too cold to ride a bike? 7 tips for below freezing cycling. Woo. Below freezing. Nah, I don't like that. If it's below freezing, I can find another activity. I can go for a walk. I can go for a hike. If there's the good white stuff on the ground, I can go for a ski. I can go for a snowshoe. If the lake is frozen in the backyard, I can go ice skating. There are things you can do in the winter that will still give you that exercise that you're looking for, and your fitness that you're looking for, that will, you know, not be so intolerable. I have found, and what I have been doing for years now, 21 years now, is indoor cycling has become a norm for me in the wintertime. And it is a thing that I never really used to like to do. I'd rather just, you know, suck it up and go out and ride in the cold rather than be stuck indoors on a trainer. But then when I started finally teaching indoor cycling, and it gave me some motivation to show up and kept me on a daily schedule, I started to appreciate it a lot more. And of course, you know, if you talk to Franny about this, she'll tell you all about Zwift and how much fun she has on Zwift. And that's a program that you can get for your indoor trainer. A specific trainer is necessary for that sort of thing. But there are ways to make indoor cycling more tolerable as far as that goes. I personally like the people contact. I have a very, very steady Monday through Friday, 2 different time period classes that I teach up at our local community center, and I get a minimum of 8 riders in each class. So we've got a pretty good core group, and they're very dedicated to what we're doing. So that, to me, keeps me happy enough to be able to continue to ride indoors. And you don't have to ride hard indoors every single time you get on the bike. That is not necessary. As a matter of fact, it's not smart. Maybe we'll do another episode on the benefits and the rewards of easy day, hard day. I'm a big, big believer in making sure you get proper rest in between. And there's more written about rest days now than there has ever been in the past. So I think the studies are now showing that if you're out there going hard every day, it's probably not a great idea. And especially when you add the elements into it and the cold, which is going to be a lot more trying on your body. It's going to take a lot more energy to be able to deal with the cold. So, you know, anyway, 7 tips for below freezing cycling. Let's see what these guys have to say. The first tip is very obvious. You need to dress for the cold. And there's, it says here, there's an old Norwegian proverb that was also the mantra of famed polar explorer Ranulf Fiennes. There's no such thing as bad weather, just inappropriate clothing. The key is layering. Multiple layers allow you to easily customize your kit to adapt to different conditions. Cycling-specific winter clothing has a lot of advantages over general snow sports gear. It's cut tighter and stretches so it doesn't interfere with your pedaling, which is much often much thinner and lighter too. It wicks away moisture to keep you warm and dry, and there are many warmer places pieces will use wind-blocking materials in the front to reduce the chill and vents in the back to keep you dry. I'm a big believer in the wind block because it's all about the wind as far as I'm concerned. You know, you get out on a really cold day, even on a cool day, and if the wind is blowing or there's a hard northwest wind, that's where our cold comes from. It comes out of Canada. Hello, Canada. It comes out of Canada, and that's where the real cold biting northwest winds come from. And if you're riding into that, it will cut right through you like a knife. So you have to be able to somehow block it from doing that. Of course, if you're faced into it, then you want to be blocking it from the front. If it's one of those days that the wind is blowing in, obviously in circles and all over the place, maybe you want to have wind protection all around. But most essentially, you want to have something in the front. So a thermal headband or a skull cap that you can wear underneath your helmet is huge, because you got all these lovely vents on your helmet. And those lovely vents on your helmet are great when it's hot outside and you're trying to let some of that heat off the top of your head, but not so good in the cold. So you need to figure out a way to deal with that. There are also covers that you can put on top of your helmet that would be normally used for keeping rain out, because they do make protective rain covers for the top of your helmet. And that will also keep your head a lot warmer too, because it's holding the heat in. You have to really kind of figure out what's best for you, and that's really what it comes down to. Another really big thing is a neck gaiter or a buff. And these things are simply like a big sleeve that slides over your head and goes down around your neck, giving you essentially the old the old fashion statement, turtleneck. If you remember turtleneck sweaters and turtleneck tops from years ago. And if you don't, then you're not old like I am. But you folks that are out there in my neck of the woods, you understand what I'm talking about. So it gives you the ability to stop the draft that's going down inside towards your chest. And it really is comfortable. It really makes a big difference. The other cool thing about neck gaiters is that if it's extremely cold and you didn't really put on proper headgear, you can always pull them up and over your ears, and now you've made it into like a balaclava, which is a great piece of equipment if you ride in any kind of cold weather and you don't know what a balaclava is. You're not from the Northeast, that's for sure, or any place in the northern states, because we all live by them at certain times of the year. I recommend something fairly thin, because cycling wise, if you get something that's too thick, it's just going to be very, very uncomfortable. So a couple of other things you might want to look at is a good base layer. Base layers can be made out of a number of different materials. Most of them are synthetic. There is the old-fashioned wool. Yeah, remember wool? Yeah, sheep. Wool. Good. Yes. If you can stand the possibility that it might be a little bit itchy, because some people don't respond well to wool, wool's probably the best I've ever worn as far as a base layer goes. It just keeps you incredibly warm. It wicks away a very large percentage of its weight in moisture. It'll draw it away from your body, keeping your body dry. Keep your body dry, your body stays warmer, much, much warmer. But there are a bunch of synthetic ways of doing it too. So you can get different types of tops that will do essentially the same thing as the wool will do, but it will be a more synthetic version. So if you're not feeling warm and fuzzy about petroleum products, I don't recommend them because that could be a problem. But if you can not have a problem with that, then they work really well. And if you have an allergy to the itchiness of the wool, then obviously it might be a better way to go. Personally, I like wool, but I don't always wear wool. So a lightweight winter jacket or shell is really great. Thermal gloves are great. Wind vests are great. Arm warmers are great. They all work. Thermal tights or knee warmers, definitely good. Knee warmers I would wear in addition to the tights to keep my knees extra warm. But once again, once you do that, you're going to really restrict your movement on the bike. So it's going to make things bind up a little bit, but it will protect you. And shoe covers or toe caps never work for me. Shoe covers definitely have never worked for me either, but there you go. But then there's other things you can do too. When you get into the real cold, you can actually get inserts for your shoes, which are electronic heaters, and you could use the little chemical ones that go into your shoes too. I don't find them to be very effective at all, or definitely not for very long, as well as the shoe covers. I don't find them great either, but there are also great shoes that you can get that have a little bit more insulation in them and no venting whatsoever, so they're not going to allow the cold air to come into your shoes. My favorite of all, as far as the hands go, and I will continue to promote this idea because I just think they're great, is to put the covers on the handlebars. There's a company called Climate out there, Barmit used to be Climate. There was another company called Climate. I used to have a set of those too. Barmit, and that's with two R's and two T's, and they're great. They just shut off the cold air to your fingertips. And you can wear a much lighter pair of gloves, so you've got better function on your fingertips than you would if you were wearing a pair of lobster claw gloves or something that was really bulky, mitten type thing. It's the Climate is really the answer. It makes a huge difference when your hands get too warm in them. And yeah, they'll get too warm in them. That's the amazing thing. You can actually just take your hand out, put it up on top of the handlebar, let it cool down, and then slide it back in. So, you know, if they could just make those for my feet, I would be a happy guy. But I have not yet found anything that is as effective as the Climate is for my feet. So anyway, thermal socks, that's kind of an obvious. So these are all pieces of equipment that you're going to find to be super helpful for you if you do want to plan on continuing to ride in the wintertime as far as your clothing goes. So how cold is too cold? Well, we're not going to get into that. Stay visible. That's a really good one. If you're going to be riding on the road, you got to understand that there are people out there that are driving motorized vehicles who are not looking for you. Now, we know that in the summertime too. We know that all the time too, as we are bike riders and we're dealing with that. And the first thing that a driver of a motorized vehicle is looking for is another motorized vehicle. They do not pay attention to us on the road, and that's why I talk a lot about road behavior. When you're out there riding your bike, make sure you ride out towards the middle of the road rather than on the edge of the road so you're seen. But it's really cool to have visible clothing on too. It makes a big difference. And yeah, you may not look like the hot European pro bike racer that you really think you might want to be, or whatever it is that you're imagining when you're out riding your bike. But you know what? If you're seen, it's a really good thing. I just talked to a friend of mine this morning. He said there was a guy out riding his bike last night on the roads, and he had flashing red lights on his bike on the front, but not on the back. And he said, he almost hit him. He said, I'm driving my car down the road, and all of a sudden there was this person dressed in black and no lights on the back of the bike, only on the front of the bike. And he goes, what kind of idiot would do that? Well, obviously someone who wasn't thinking real well. So be visible, be visible. There's tons of visible clothing out there. There's lots of reflectorized things you can do. You can make your bike into a giant reflector if you want to. You can get the sticky back tapes that go up and down the rear stays of the bike. You can do a lot of things to make your bike visible. And not to mention the excessive number of lights you can put on your bike. So there's staying visible is just a really, really good idea. And again, if you are going to be riding in the wintertime, if you're going to be out when motorists and normal people, we're not normal, are we? We're bike people. We're different. They're just not expecting to see you there. So try to make it so that they understand that you're there, and try not to cause a problem while you're there. Don't forget about those lovely radar lights that go on the back of your bike. Garmin was the first company to make those. There are others out there now, but they're unbelievable. They really do. They're a game changer. They really are a game changer. So I would look at that too. Don't fear the muck. There's a third suggestion here. Winterize, clean, and maintain your bike, okay? Your bike's going to get dirty if you're going to ride the winter. The roads are messy. The roads have gravel on them often this time of year because they use gravel as a way of giving you traction during snowy and icy days, and we get snowy and icy days here up in the Northeast. So you need to understand that your bike is going to get dirty, and you got to keep your drivetrain clean and lubricated, and it's going to require a lot more maintenance to ride outside in the wintertime because you got to work on your bike. You're going to have to, spray it down. You're going to have to wipe it down. You got to do whatever, but you're going to have to spend some time cleaning it. Ron, Pedalin' Ron, has a rule, and that is if it takes you longer to get dressed and then get on your bicycle and take your bike out for a ride, and then when you get back, clean your bicycle and then take all those clothes off that you put on, you probably shouldn't be out there. You should probably ride indoors. You could crack off a good workout in an hour and you'll be done. And I know it's not the same as going, out to the local coffee shop and having a great coffee and, chatting with your friends and all that, but there is a time issue involved here. And, if you've got an excessive amount of time, maybe you're retired. They tell me I am. And maybe you have that extra time. They tell me I do. Anyway, then you can afford to do that. Personally, cleaning my bicycle every single time I ride my bike is not my favorite thing to do. I spent many, many, many years in the bicycle industry, and I did a lot of cleaning of bicycles that were not mine, and I just don't like to do it anymore. I'll admit it. I really don't like to do it anymore. I mean, I can do it. I have the skills. I know how to do it. I know how to break down a bike and get it nice and clean in a short period of time, but is it something I want to do every single time I go for a bike ride? Probably not. Now, if it's just a cold day and the roads are clear, then you probably won't have to clean your bike. But, if it's a messy day, you're going to have to deal with that. So be aware of that sort of thing. Number 5 on the list here, don't suffer alone. Ride with friends and find some inspiration to get you out on the road. So that's a biggie. A buddy is any workout that you're doing, any kind of physical exercise that you're doing that you're having trouble motivating yourself with is so much easier to do when you've got a buddy. Make sure you find yourself a buddy. Find somebody who is crazy enough as you are to be out there and doing it, and go ride. Go have a good time. You know, have a chat. Have a coffee. Have a pastry. I don't care. But, you know, make it into something that's really fun. If you decide that the only thing you're going to do is you're just going to do a short loop from the house, then make sure you have, you know, snacks available afterwards so you can sit down and have something nice and warm afterwards and you know, chat about whatever, or maybe, you know, watch some bike racing on TV or on YouTube now for free. Good stuff, yeah. So you could do that. So don't suffer alone. Ride with friends. That's a great tip. That's a wonderful one. And here we go. Number six. And before I get to going to the dark side, I'm gonna go a little dim here. Adjust and lower your riding expectations, please. You know, riding in the cold is hard. It's really difficult. It drains you. It makes you feel more fatigued than you normally would on a nice, warm, sunny day. Don't set your sights so high that you come back and you feel disappointed. You don't want to do that. What you want to do is you want to come back and feel invigorated by the idea that, you know what I did today? I went out and rode. It was 25 degrees out and I just bundled up and I met with a friend and we went out. We had a great ride and we came back and we laughed about it and said, what in the world were we doing? Ha, ha, ha. And when can we do it again? Don't set those expectations to the point where you think that you have to go out and just kill yourself every time you ride in the wintertime. Don't do that. So, and then number seven, here it is. Yep, here it is. Maybe embrace the indoor trainer. It's really not that bad. And I will agree with this. It isn't that bad. The actual trainer that we have downstairs is very nice. Fran spends a mountain of time on it. She really does. But, you know, it works for her schedule. It works for a lot of good reasons. And she's always warm when she's down there, especially if I've got the pellet stove going. Then she's extra warm. Then it's like you're riding in sunny Florida, you know? But you don't have to be in Florida, which is another deterrent to riding indoors. But anyway, or outdoors. We will be traveling to Florida here real soon. Early January, Fran and I are going to go down. We're going to visit with her mom like we do every year. And we have bikes down there that we will be able to take out and ride. And hopefully we'll have some good weather. And, you know, we'll get out there and battle the cars of Florida. It's not the most friendly environment to ride in. I'll put it that way. It's warm. I'll give you that. It's not a friendly environment. It's not bike friendly down there in many places. Fortunately, her mom lives very, very close to a trail which goes north by at least like 20 miles or so north. And we can ride up there. We can ride to a coffee shop and we can, you know, it's quite nice. And so, yeah, it's just a flat trail and it's, you know, a little on the boring side, but hey, you're on your bike, you're moving. That's a good thing. That's always good. So anyway, that's it. There's your seven tips. That all came from the Pros Closet. Thank you, Pros Closet. And yes, they are still there. It is all true. Yeah, there was rumor that they were going to go away, but it doesn't look like they're going away. Let's move on to our next subject here on Bicycle Talk. The next subject I have in here is the outgoing transportation secretary, Mr. Buttigieg. Is talking about what's next. And the Biden administration, this is a little political thing here, the Biden administration has launched 66,000 infrastructure projects. And there's an interview here with a site called Fast Company. They have lots of interesting stuff. And it's basically Pete Buttigieg talking about what's next. So yeah, we've got a what's next going on. There's going to be a lot of changes going on soon, we think, although we hear more than we actually see. That has been the past experience with the current administration that's coming in, the one that, who will be taking over. They tend to promise lots of things that they never carry through with. And fortunately, there was a lot done by the Biden administration with Pete Buttigieg involved with transportation that these projects have been started and things are going forward there. So, and they will probably be rolled out to completion. Whether new ones will happen or not, I don't know. I just kind of scanned this article, so I didn't get a real good chance to take a look at it, but I can give you an idea of what's going on. And the big thing that happened here is there was a bipartisan infrastructure law, and both sides agreed. Rare opportunity, but they made some huge changes, including removing lead pipes, which was other little things, an EV charging network, and upgrading the electrical grid, which those two things really, really need a lot of work. So there's been some work done, and 66,000 is a huge number of projects, and there's really been nothing like it in this lifetime. It's almost hard to understand the scale of work that's going on. Secretary Buttigieg says that he visits some of the projects, of course, but if he had visited every project every day for the rest of his life, he would not live long enough to see half of the projects. So that gives you an idea of just how big this is and what did happen in this past administration. By the way, I'm going to mention something about this too that's very important. It's put a lot of people to work. It gave a lot of people jobs, and it's all very, very positive. I know we've had a lot of construction around town because of it. There's good things going on, and we've also seen improvements in some of our bike trails. We've seen additions to our bike trails. This is all really, really good stuff. So, the Biden administration did a lot of good things for the infrastructure, and a lot of funding from this is, get this off of here, a lot of funding is going to sustainable transportation projects, including work to help repair neighborhoods that were cut in half by highways in the middle of the past century. So this is all good stuff. There's so many different changes, more pathways, more walkways, more sidewalks, more parks, all contributing to a much better place to ride your bike and to get around on your bicycle. So there's just so many positive things going on. There's also high-speed rail lines that are, there's one that's breaking ground between Las Vegas and California. Think about how many cars drive to Las Vegas every day from Los Angeles, and there's going to be a high-speed train that does that instead. It's a big thing. It's a really big deal for Vegas, for sure. It doesn't take that long to get between those two cities if you're driving a car, but if you could put a high-speed train in, you could probably reduce that time again, and you wouldn't be having to, go through airport security and sitting and waiting for your flight and then finally getting on your flight and then getting some ground transportation once you get there. It's a better way to go. So that's really nice. And hey, maybe they'll have a provision where you can put your bike on the train and bring it with you. And then once you get there, you'll be able to ride around town on your bicycle, What a nice idea that would be. So there's also a number of bus rapid transit routes and different things that have gone on. So a lot of really special projects going on, and they're already implemented. So they're probably going to continue to be carried on, and they won't be stopped, because if they're stopped, it means people are going to lose jobs. And that's not what the current, what the new administration wants to see. So anyway, it was a really positive interview, and it's there is going to be a lot of transition going on here as we change over our administrations. But let's hope that, you know, things like in this particular respect, that, you know, there will be some people that shed some wisdom upon why things shouldn't change a lot in certain areas. I know that there is a person who has pretty much revolutionized the electric car industry, who is now a very strong member of the new administration. And the last thing he is going to want to see is anything that damages his multi-billion dollar, maybe even trillion dollar business that he has going on right now. So people get a little freaked out. I don't get so freaked out, because, you know, it'll all come down to the fact that there's only so much you can do. And we never did see that wall get built, did we? Anyway, moving on, little comment there. Probably shouldn't have gone there, but I did. So let's see what else I've got on my list here of things to talk about. The Journalist Voice. So countless U.S. journalists routinely reduce the deaths of vulnerable road users to bloodless sound bites, sanitizing the grisly acts of traffic violence into annoying but temporary slowdowns for motorists. They call even the most avoidable crashes accidents without stopping to analyze the myriad of ways that policymakers and road designers and drivers themselves could and should have prevented these very preventable deaths. They use passive voice and non-agentive language to subtly exonerate even the most aggressive motorists with sentences like, "The cyclist was killed by an SUV," rather than, "An SUV driver killed a cyclist," even in cases when road rage or recklessness played an irrefutable role. So, yeah, here we go. What is with journalism these days? We can probably pick at it from a number of different angles here, but I believe that we're having the slow demise and death of the true journalist. I think they're going away rapidly, and they're more interested in what the editor of their journalistic production is going to do, or controlled by that person or those persons, than they are at actually reporting the real news. So yeah, and this is so incredibly common with bicycles, because bicycles in the eyes of the United States, I'll point the finger directly at us, we're terrible about this. The bicyclists are not considered a machine of necessity. It is considered a recreational piece of equipment. And in my case, I will admit I'm part of that. But I also, when I am fit, I use my bicycle to commute and travel myself around town, do shopping trips, and occasionally riding back and forth to work. So I'm kind of on the 50-50 on that one. I don't use it full time all the time, like some dedicated friends of mine do, and big tip of the cycling cap to them for doing that. But, you know, bicycles are looked at as the vehicle of choice for people who don't have enough money to afford a car. And that is a big problem. And then the journalists report it the same way. Like, the bicycle was in the road. No wonder he got hit. Well, maybe it's more like, you know, the bicycle was in the road because he belonged there and someone was too impatient, so they hit them. Twist that around a little bit and you change the whole voice of the journalism in this country. And journalism in this country is weak at best, as far as I'm concerned. It just has a major problem. So Streets Blog has an article that says, when journalists give intentional traffic violence a pass. So this all came out from a driver who killed a Paris cycling advocate, Paul Verry. And that driver has been charged with murder. But America's top-selling newspaper seemingly implied that he's a victim of the war on cars. And see, the biggest thing about the war on cars, there's people like me out there and you that's riding your bike and you hate cars, so it's a big war thing. It's not a big war thing. It's an acceptance thing. It's a matter of, we all have the right to be out and be on the road. So therefore, let's talk about it. Let's not create a war. Let's not create violence from it. Let's not create road rage from it. That's just an unnecessary waste of emotion and energy. So road rage is the problem. And there's now places like Paris that are the mayor is having a basic war on cars, or at least that's the assumption of what it is. But it's not really that. It's really more of a war on the perception of a bicycle and pedestrians being used as transportation instead of the car. And this is where the twist becomes a problem. And so if you know a journalist, if you know someone who writes for a local paper, a local newspaper, maybe a local, just a small rag, whatever it is that, you know, just gives general information, have a chat with them and say, hey, have you ever thought about, you know, what's going on here as far as, you know, bicycles go on the road? How do you feel about it? Get their opinion and then have a chat. Because I can guarantee you their opinion is, the first thing that will come out is, you know, I was driving my car the other day, and this guy on this bicycle, guaranteed, that is probably going to be a 90% chance response if you ask even a journalist about talking about bicycles being on the road. They're going to automatically react in the same way as they write, which is not good. It's not open-minded. It's not looking at the entire situation. If you're going to be a really good journalist, you need to be able to see outside the box. And if the box is the only thing that's keeping you from getting your paycheck, then maybe you should consider a different profession, you know, because this is not good. It's not good journalism. So this is going on around the world. It's not just here in the U.S., but it's more so here in the U.S. because we're so incredibly car-centric here. And I get it. I understand. I do enjoy driving my motorized vehicle. It is a privilege that I have, and I do see it as a privilege. I don't see it as a right. It is a privilege, and it's just a matter of, yeah, I'm going to see, you know what? I don't get mad when the mailman's in front of me and I can't get around them, or the garbage truck this morning when I was trying to get myself up to the community center so I could teach my class and I didn't want to be late. I just look at it as, okay, they're there. Take a deep breath and get around them when you have the safe opportunity to do it and just continue on. It's not that big a deal. It's kind of a small stuff thing, and you really shouldn't sweat the small stuff. So the journalists, just, it's been pretty much straight across the board that journalists do write in favor of the motorized vehicle. And it's very, very unfortunate, and it needs to change. And that's why I'm talking about it on Bicycle Talk. So the next time you talk to a friend or a an acquaintance or whatever that has anything to do with good journalism, have a chat with them about bikes and say, hey, how do you feel about bikes being on the road? Ask that question. I can give you that 90% answer again, but I'm not going to do that because you already heard that earlier. But I guarantee you, you will start a little bit of a fire. And at that point, you need to know how to be an effective fire person and douse that fire and maybe show a way of protecting from the flames the next time. So that's my analogy. It's a little weak, but it's okay. That's what I'm going to do. So anyway, what else do we have here? We are getting down to the end of the wire here. Oh boy, here we go. This is not so good. Let me see if I can find this one. Where is he? Eddie Merckx. You know Eddie Merckx? I talk about Eddie Merckx a lot. You know, the greatest cyclist that ever lived. Not even debatable. Don't even get me started. That'll just turn into another hour-long discussion. But he's a legend. He's often regarded as the greatest cyclist of all time. He's recovering right now in a hospital after suffering a broken hip and a bike crash. Yeah, Eddie still rides his bike. How about that? Can you imagine that? As well accomplished as he was, you would think he would just say, you know what? Enough of this bike stuff. I've had it. I did it. I made my point. I've been there. I've done that. I don't need to do this anymore. But no, he's still out riding his bike. The accident actually occurred during near Merckx's home in Belgium, where he was riding with friends on a regular group ride. So he's out for a group ride, and he states, it was a stupid accident, the family of five-time tour winner Eddie Merckx told Belgian outlet newspaper. There were no other road users involved, and Eddie just skidded away. Luckily, he wasn't alone, so because he felt a really sharp pain in his hip, and he knew right away at that time that there was the suspicion that was also confirmed at the hospital that he broke his hip, and he now has to undergo surgery. So, yeah, he slipped out on his bike. Who knows what he hit? Who knows what he did? He's an extremely, and I mean with a capital E, extremely experienced cyclist. So, you know, but accidents happen. That's why they call them accidents. Okay. Sources close to the Merckx family confirmed that after the crash, the 79-year-old was immediately taken to a nearby hospital. Eddie is in stable and good hands, a family spokesman said. He's already showing his characteristic determination to overcome the challenge, just as he did throughout his racing career. So, yeah, Eddie's okay, but he fell off his bike. It happens. At 79, it's a little bit tougher because, you know, things break now when you hit. It's a real bummer. You know, I'm not 79, but he's got 10 years on me. And I can tell you right now, the one thing I do not want to do, I mean, just do not want to do anymore, is fall off my bike. And I've fallen off my bike multiple times. And, you know, I do my best to avoid it at all costs, really. Because it is an unpleasant experience. And now my vulnerability once I hit the pavement, depending on speed and impact and how I impact, it's a little more life-threatening than it used to be. So I tend to ride with an extreme amount of caution when I'm with a group and less caution when I'm by myself. But that's probably not the right way to do it, but that's what I do. So Last thing on the list here, and I barely have time. You know what? I'm going to save this one for next week. It's all about how I've been warning everyone about the upcoming administration and the tariffs that are coming in. And I'll get to this one on my next episode, because there's some light shining out here on this, as far as what's going on and what the industry is doing to keep things from getting completely out of control, seeing as more than 90% of our product comes from China. So that is kind of a big deal. Don't give away your old bikes yet. You know, you may need them, and they may be worth a lot of money in the next couple of years. But that's another story for another time. And we will talk about that next week, but I have to go on to getting closer to my calendar here, and we'll talk, like I said, next week about the whole tariff situation. World Cup Cyclocross race. I watched the Dublin cross race. It was like, you know, it was okay. Kind of flat. It had some ups and downs in it and all. It just didn't really look to be as technical a course as I would have expected from a World Cup race. Hopefully the Nationals race coming up this weekend down in Louisville will be a little more challenging. But I really did not see this as a World Cup course. I was a little disappointed when I watched it. It was, you know, there were good races there, you know, the men's race, there were 7 guys that stayed together the whole way, which is kind of phenomenal. Usually doesn't happen, but moving on. We will go on to events. The only event I have on my calendar right now is the National Cyclocross Championships, which is happening in Louisville. And it will be happening this December 12th through the 15th. So it's this weekend coming up, starting on Thursday. And it should be very interesting. I'm assuming they're going to use the same course as they did last year. Will we get a repeat on the winner of the race? Last year he had a major mechanical, and Eric Bruin? Is that his last name? He had a major mechanical. He got off his bike. He's looking at his bike. He can't get it to work. He gets back on his bike. He gets off his bike. Somehow he makes it into the pit area in enough time to chase down the leaders in the race and go on and win the race. Shouldn't have happened. Unbelievable race. Great to watch. Another phenomenal race. Very similar to the 2017 race with the broken bike. And that was in Hartford, Connecticut. And that was just a phenomenal race also. So, it's this weekend. Should be fun. Should be fun to watch. Can't wait. So, what else do I have to say? I think that's about all I've got right now. I'm going to bring us to a halt here. You have been listening to Bicycle Talk, and the views expressed in this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. And I'm without my lovely co-host, the lovely Dr. Brand Storch. She is off to work, and I am doing this on a Tuesday because I have a Monday commitment right now. And so don't get used to seeing me on Mondays anymore, because it looks like it's going to be Tuesdays through the month of December. I've got some work changes and some people out, actually an old guy like me out with a surgery thing that he's getting through, and I'm teaching some of his classes for him. So remember, you can also listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, and now on my Bicycle Talk YouTube channel. So if you'd like to contribute information to the show, you can drop me an email at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. This is Pedalin' Ron. Remember, keep the rubber side down, the wind at your back, get out and ride your bike. It really could save your life. Save mine. This is 91.7 FM WHUS Stores and WHUS.org. Thank you so much for listening. See you next week. Get on your bikes and ride!